The Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
The international unites the whole darn human race.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice, roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. This is Dave Zirin returning to you in this new year, in the year 2025, a year of great challenges and great promise. So thrilled to have on the show with me today, attempting to talk this through, everything that was the year in sports politics, everything that will be in sports and politics, some of the biggest debates raging in the world of sports and politics for our new year show. Thrilled to have him on the line, Coach Kevin McNutt. Coach, how you doing, sir?
Happy New Year, brother.
Man, it's great to have you on the line in full chuckle mode. Well, let me start. Are you there, Coach? I know we've got some big questions that we want to talk about what were some of the stories of 2024, what are some of the issues that you want to raise going forward. And I definitely love having you on the show, Coach. So let's make this count. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, first and foremost, Coach, and I'd love your thoughts about this. There are a lot of talks about who was the athlete of 2024. And a lot of people are looking to the Summer Olympics to find answers, particularly in the incredible story of Simone Biles and her ability to come back after the devastation that was Tokyo in 2021 and return to the top of her sport at an age, let's remember, where most gymnasts are headed for the retirement home, if you can believe that. But that's how cruel gymnastics can be once you've hit your mid-20s. But to me, the story this year, Coach, and I'm curious about this given your own connections to women's basketball, to me, the story of the entire year was Caitlin Clark, and what's become known as the Caitlin Clark effect. Caitlin Clark right now, Coach, because of the year 2024, is the most famous U.S. basketball player under 30. And frankly, I don't even know who's close as second to that. Let's remember, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is from Canada. But even with all the pressure on Clark and the fame, she set a single season and single game records in the WNBA this year in assists. She broke the rookie scoring record. She became the first rookie to get a triple-double. And she did all this while moving directly from an exhausting year at Iowa, where every game became this huge media event with packed crowds and all the rest of it, straight to the WNBA, where all these doubters emerged about whether she could make it there, et cetera, et cetera. Doubters from across the landscape, across the board. And, you know, the start of her season was uneven. The end of the season that she had was brilliant. She dragged the Indiana Fever to the playoffs, where they were just, I think they only won one game the previous year, one or two games. And she dragged them to the playoffs along with Aaliyah Boston, great young player. But the thing I want to emphasize about Caitlin Clark is women's basketball became huge in 2024. And a lot of players became far better known. Asia Wilson, of course, Angel Reese, of course, a lot of names. But Caitlin Clark has dragged this league to something that's now part of mainstream sports conversation. And we can talk about the reasons why that's the case. But just on its own, Coach, I think what Caitlin Clark, and I got to put it on her shoulders primarily, even with all the greats in women's basketball, Caitlin Clark dragged this league to a different level of attention in 2024. And I think that in and of itself needs acknowledgement.
I hear you. Continue.
No, that's my whole thing on Caitlin Clark. And I wanted, there's one other thing I'll throw in about Caitlin Clark, Coach. And I really do want your response on this. I mean, basically, in a lot of ways, she is Larry Bird. It's silly comparing Angel Reese to Magic Johnson and being like, oh, they have a Magic Bird rivalry. I've always found that to be a media creation, very silly, not the least of which because the positions they play are so different that there's very little of that one-on-one competition that Magic and Bird made so famous. And also Angel Reese, who had an amazing rookie year. I mean, to compare her to Magic Johnson is kind of silly, who's one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. But comparing Caitlin Clark to Bird has some very interesting similarities. Coming out of college, so celebrated. The whole Great White Hope narrative that surrounded them. The bringing in of thousands of new fans who, in 1979, weren't trying to watch the NBA. Just like today, people weren't trying to watch the WNBA. But the difference between her and Bird is that at the end of the season, in an interview with Time Magazine, Caitlin Clark really did attempt to wrestle with the fact that she's white, the fact that she's straight, the fact that she's telegenic, and the role that all that stuff played into her popularity and into the thousands of new fans that joined the party of the league. And I think that in and of itself it's almost like she's Larry Bird with a social conscience that Bird never had. And yet still she's subject to a lot of criticism from all corners for who she is, for what she says. When I think we really need to appreciate what she's done more than any kind of politics that she represents. So I think that in and of itself makes her the most significant athlete of 2024.
So is she your athlete of the year?
I think she is.
Okay.
Which I did not expect to say, particularly because of being so impressed with Simone Biles, Shohei Ohtani in baseball, Nikola Jokic. I mean, the first guy since LeBron to be considered just like the unquestionably best player in the game, like dominating the sport, could win his fourth MVP in 5 years. I mean, there are a lot of good candidates, and I could name another half dozen people from the Paris Olympics alone. But I just feel like Caitlin Clark had a transformative effect on us that a year ago, very few of us would have predicted.
My question That's to my you, main. And the resume that you put out there for Caitlin is accurate and undisputable. But I want to ask you, in relation to the Simone Biles, who is my athlete of the year, what has Caitlin overcome?
I think, first of all, I put zero shade on anybody who would put that on Simone Biles. 0.0 shade. Simone is Simone is Simone. You know what I think. Arguably the greatest athlete this country has ever produced, period. Considering even folks like Jim Brown and Wilt Chamberlain. Like, my esteem for her is very high. And what she came back from was very high. But you asked what Caitlin Clark overcame. And I think she overcame what, frankly, is the most difficult thing in sports. And she hasn't overcome it yet in full. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar overcame this too. And that is the curse of what people call unlimited potential. And Caitlin Clark had to represent on so many levels, like March Madness, bringing eyeballs to that. Where she was the biggest attraction, including the men's. Transition immediately to the WNBA, and not only playing in the WNBA, but being responsible for lifting the WNBA while under a lot of sniping from the WNBA. You know, that some of it physical on the court, you know, a lot of it verbal.
You're not answering my question. I don't see that as overcoming anything.
You don't think
that's expectations that any athlete has at any level. Hers was magnified because she was a white player. And for any player in these days, you brought up Kareem. Social media is out there and gone wild. It's going to put expectations on you, unbelievable, that are hard to meet. She's an excellent athlete. She can light it up from carry range and all of those things. But what has she overcome? The WA was growing without her. Yes, she took it to a new height, and she took it there at an accelerated pace. She drove up the ratings in women's NCAA. But that was coming with Dawn Staley in South Carolina. So
not give people credit where it's due, but she took it to a whole nother level. Yes, it was building in popularity, but this traveling roadshow of sold-out stadiums for women's hoops in NBA arenas is something new. And Simone,
what's she overcoming,
is so
though,
great.
Dave? I'm agreeing, but what is she overcoming?
The pressure to make all
Simone
that happen,
Biles,
I think.
Go ahead.
No, just I was going to say the pressure to make all that happen was an obstacle for her basketball development. And I'll tell you the other thing, too, is that she had a lot of doubters. And I ask you this, honestly. Even with all she overcame on the mental tip, I was in Paris, as
Simone,
you know,
or,
I don't know if it gives me special insight on this. But Simone was still the favorite in a lot of this. Even with everything, that's the amount of respect that she has. And greatness. So when she had to overcome a lot, yes. But I would argue a lot of that had been overcome before the year 2024, psychologically.
Okay, regardless, because she had overcome this in international sports. The whole world was watching.
Yes.
And she did it bravely, courageously, for the world to see, she exposed
publicly,
herself.
You mean publicly? Like, she had to do this in front of the world, a very sensitive psychological journey in front of the world.
Yes. And that, you're that saying Caitlin had pressure. No, like, every athlete has a level of pressure. And she knew it, and she carried it well. But in comparison, I don't see it. You're talking about expectations of people, expectations of her team, the NCAA. Well, that was okay. That was there. I mean, she's a white athlete, which the nation was clamoring for, and she can play, yes. And she delivered.
But you know so that white America has pined for athletes playing to her skill level. As long as there's been sports. You see what I'm saying? And that doesn't mean they all deliver. I mean, Jerry Cooney surrounds this conversation in my mind.
Come on, man. Come on. You got to do better than that.
I got to do better than Jerry Cooney?
Look,
Adam Morrison better?
No, absolutely not.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? They were calling Adam Morrison Larry Bird for some reason. Hey, I mean... Look. You know that runs deep, the desire for a white man to stand astride of sports. And her doing it, though, as a white woman, also another level of pressure in terms of trying to convince all these sports radio yahoos that it was worth covering.
See, and right there, who cares?
Okay, that's a fair about. Point, social too. Media. I accept that. Who cares?
Yeah. You know, the way you're going here with social media and Jerry Cooney, I would say to you, watch his boxing references. Ali saying to Foreman in the fifth round, that's all you got, George? I
mean, oh, come on.
You're not stating your case well, brother.
Oh, come on. You're putting the rumble in the jungle on me? You're putting that on
well,
me?
Well, you brought up Jerry Cooney.
I think it's more like Manila, and I'm Ali, and you're like in there what? Not being able to see is Joe Frazier. And I'm just standing there, boy. Ali, no more dancing, just throwing blows, of course, of a figurative level, because we're all about peace here. But you hear what I'm saying. But you're Frazier. Okay, glad we could settle that. No.
What have you said?
I know, man. That's low, dirty pool by me. But no. It's hard for me to argue with you on this at all because of the respect I have for Biles. I just think. The transform, like, who's talking about, like, gymnastics? We'll talk about it again in 4 years. Yes, it's an incredible, incredible athletic feat. And Simone Biles.
But wait a minute, Dave. Let me jump in there. But we're talking about mental health every day.
Now, that's true. Mental health is an issue every day. No doubt about that. And I don't want to denigrate what she had to go through. But I also think that based on my understanding of the Simone Biles journey, and we should move on from this at some point, my understanding is that she got her stuff together between her ears in the years leading up to 2024 because she knew that by 2024, it would be too late to get your stuff together. You see what I'm saying? And so she went about 2024 like the soldier and the Olympic champion that she is. Meanwhile, all this stuff is thrown on Caitlin Clark every step of the way. Better make it to the Final Four. Better carry the WNBA. Now you're part of an Olympic controversy that you didn't even ask for. And yet now has thrown you in the middle of yet another controversy. You've got a Christine Brennan, who I love individually as a person, but who created a lot of ill will for Caitlin Clark, even though Caitlin Clark had nothing to do with it, because you probably heard this story. Our listeners may have heard it. The great Christine Brennan, one of our finest sports columnists, was at WNBA practices and just asking random questions about Caitlin Clark, trying to get some hot quotes for her book. And wow, did that earn her some pain because she got the union of the WNBA formally put out a statement that Christine Brennan was not invited to these scrums after the game, which is a heck of a rebuke, especially of a reporter as esteemed as Christine Brennan, who's done as much for women's sports as Christine Brennan. Frankly, I did not disagree. I mean, I did disagree with the decision of the union, and you don't hear me say that very often because I think it's not the way to go about this. And Christine Brennan wants to ask terrible questions, then she's going to ask terrible questions. But you see the point I'm trying to make here is that that so much was thrown on Caitlin Clark, not the least of which, Coach, is the fact that you know and I know that because she brought in all these new fans, a lot of them had like a MAGA vibe to them because they were seeing this white straight athlete do all these great things. But that made a lot of people criticize Caitlin as if she was responsible for who was bringing in the tickets, which is why she had to speak the end of the year about racism, which really, really upset a lot of the right wingers who had seen her as their own personal avatar. And I'm sure they dreamed of inviting her to the presidential inauguration ball or whatever, you know, as they've been trying to, you know, like stack celebrities to add legitimacy to Trump. So, you know, I just think that what Caitlin Clark was able to accomplish in this political maelstrom was very impressive while also setting a league record in assists. What a passer she is.
Right. No, so, denying.
You're not feeling this at all.
But I have to ask, didn't Simone have that? People were saying she's a quitter. She didn't press through.
Yes.
They didn't believe it. All of that, you know, on the international, on the world stage. So, and look. And Simone conquered all with her talent, just as Caitlin did with her talent level.
Yes.
She knocked down, she led the league in assists. By the way, for all she did not win a title. South Carolina yes. got her. And
that's
she's
true.
Rookie of the year.
That's got to be part of the conversation.
She carried her team to the playoffs, but that it ended there.
Yes.
I'm not trying to denigrate her. It's great.
No, I know.
I'm just giving Simone because she overcame, I don't know which one is right. Something that in every phase of society is dealing with it now.
Talk to me.
I just
You're right, ma'am. We're all trying to push through on this. Go on, please. Go on.
No, I mean, I think of some of the greatest athletes, you know, Kareem, when he went to, you brought him up earlier, when he went to UCLA, all he had, how about expectations for him?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
He achieved and excelled them with his talent.
That's right.
You think
I'm grading her on a curve a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll have to think about that. I really will have to think about that because maybe I am. I'll go into the shed and really give that some thought. I'm just so impressed with this, man. I'm so impressed with how she handled a season that changed the way we view a sport and a league. And of course she wasn't alone in doing that, but it impresses me so much that given how women, you know this better than anybody, Coach. And I'm sorry, I got to throw down with this too. Women's gymnastics have always been held in high regard in this country. You know, the heroes, the Mary Lou Rettons, you know what I'm talking about. And Gabby Douglas, Dominique Dawes, and then Gabby Douglas being the amazing trailblazers. Dominique Dawes, shout out Montgomery County. And then going straight from you know, to Simone Biles, you know, really building on what Gabby Douglas and Dominique Dawes built in terms of that level of representation. And also I got to say, like, Simone Biles clearly looks responsible to gymnastics becoming more a multicultural operation. But you put the way gymnastics are thought about in our society basketball.
I know where you're going with this, Dave.
The denigration of women's basketball that this country engages in.
You're not even doing that. No. You're just trying to say Caitlin carried a sport and lifted a sport, as Simone has done with gymnastics. But you're separating that from the mental experience for her that she had to overcome, and that's the distinction I'm using here. You can't separate the two. Both ladies lifted their sport, but Simone did it while dealing with mental illness, which transcends all aspects of society today. I'm not going to let you do that.
All right, man. You've given me a lot to think about, Coach. I'm going to give this some serious thought. You know, I'm not one of those people who's stubborn in my views. I like to think.
But you call me stubborn. I got you. I know your role, Cesarean.
Unlike some people, like you. Just kidding. Well, Coach, we've been talking on and on. I know we got to get to a break at the bottom of the hour. But before we do, talk to me, Coach. I just took us on a Caitlin Clark hole right there, going into the memories of the last year. Talk to us for a second. What are some of the issues that I know you had some things you wanted to discuss this week?
No, because, you know, you mentioned to me about, I guess we can do it after the break, about the NBA, losing favor, what have you, ratings, all of that.
A lot of questions right now, Coach. This has been the hottest. I mean, and this is actually one of the problems, and I'll say this just to set it up before we discuss, is that the hottest debate in the NBA this year has not been, should Nikola Jokic be the MVP, or wow, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and this is part of the problem, honestly, that these are such small markets, but like, wow, the Cleveland Cavaliers and Oklahoma City Thunder are playing some of the most beautiful basketball we've seen in some time. They played Wednesday night this week. It was the best time I've had watching a basketball game, in an NBA game in a while. We can talk more about what makes them good, the perils of a small market team showing this. There are a lot of reasons to criticize the NBA, but it's like I was just saying, to finish the thought, the number one debate in the league has not been what team is best, what player is best, but what's wrong with the league. And that is not good news for the league, that this is the big topic of conversation right now. And hopefully they'll move beyond it after the All-Star break. I say that as someone who likes the league, but a lot of the criticisms are very real, Coach. And we've heard some very prominent people make them. But why don't we go to a quick break right now? And when we come back, Coach, I just laid out some of the issues about people are arguing about what's wrong with the league. When we get on the other side of this, please talk to us a little bit about what some of the people are saying is wrong with the league. And I'll chime in on that. And then we'll have a real discussion about whether these criticisms are legitimate or whether this is just another case of too much moaning and groaning by a society that likes complaining more than it likes coming up with solutions. So let's go to a break right now. And we're back after this. Coach and I are going to figure out what's wrong with the NBA. And then us and us alone are going to come out with ways that we can fix it. We'll be back right after this. We are back here on The Collision. He's Kevin McNutt, the coach. I'm Dave Zirin, here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, attempting with all of our heart to change this world one broadcast at a time. Coach Kevin McNutt, we were talking before the break about the number one debate ripping through the NBA season, and that is not who's the best player, what's the best team. It's what is wrong with the game. Coach, what are people saying is wrong with the game?
So I take this as a rematch, because in the Caitlin Simone discussion, you kept talking jive, and I got you in five.
If anything, I give you a split decision. Two? Go ahead.
But Dave, it's fascinating. It is interesting what you said leading up to this. You said, we'll talk about it after the All-Star break. Well, that's not a good place to talk about it, because if they have another travesty like the All-Star game we just saw last year.
Oh, good point.
It's really going to be problems.
Yeah, that's not when you want to have the – you're not at the height of your powers. if right, you're the
right,
NBA.
Right, right, right. I mean,
yeah, and you're coming at this from that perspective.
Yeah. They're changing the All-Star format and all of that. But staying on topic, well, let me add this. The league is also looking at what's going to happen in terms of having an American-born athlete speaking for the league as LeBron, Steph, and KD move on and eventually move out. That's another big problem.
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead, brother.
So we got to separate this into two questions. What's wrong with the game? And is there a problem with the fact that the number one American stars are over 35 years old and probably the most well-known promising American player under 30 is right now a freshman at Duke? And I'm talking about Cooper Flagg. And that's a problem because there's a big gap between 18 and 36. And in that gap is a lot of players who were not born in the United States. Now, other sports have done fine in the United States when having players not born here. And yet basketball has always been known as, you know, the American game, you know, in so many respects, the city game. And so what is it going to mean for a sport when the city game is not from any city in the U.S.? But that's one right. question. We got to get to that question about can the United States accept a star not born in the United States? But and I think we know the answer to that. But the other question, Coach, is the game aesthetically pleasing? Are there too many three-pointers? Is it too cookie-cutter? Are too many of the players under 30 basically just almost like there's no more Allen Iverson? This is something I hear a lot, Coach.
Mm-hmm.
Even someone like Ja Morant is an endangered species because Ja Morant wasn't even known as a player till he was in college, really. Or while a lot of these players, you know, they're scooped up by Nike when they're 8 years old and turned into basically corporate robots by the time they enter the league, and they know what to say and they know not to mess anything up. The bleeding out of the personality, the bleeding out of the player who comes up hard, but who always believed that heaven is a playground. And, you know, AAU has obviously played its own role in this. But we'll get back to all that in a second. But the point is, Coach, is the game at present aesthetically pleasing to you?
I have checked. The answer is I've checked out of the NBA because it's not aesthetically pleasing, your term, years ago. And we've talked about this. I'm a college basketball guy. In a minute. Matter of fact, last night was a perfect example. You had, 10-win Cleveland versus 15-win Orlando, OKC, or vice versa.
Great
I
game.
Said, you know, I'm going to watch that. And then, by the way, the second game last night on ESPN was Giannis versus Wemby. A great watch. I went college.
Great matchup.
Yep, despite those matchups. And I was aware of them. I said, I'm going to check in. But I went college basketball first. Their game is much more exuberance, enthusiasm. The quote-unquote college try is there. With the NBA, teams shoot 36 trays. Matter of fact, I think that's up to 39 per team per game. It's a game of horse. You know,
well, you're trying to tell me the college game's not like
put on attractive games. But who wants to see Orlando versus the Kings on Wednesday night or the Pelicans?
Mm-hmm.
Not even mention your Wizards.
Hey.
The same things that, you know, you had never heard of load management until the NBA created it. So when
yes.
they see that and guys taking off games and you know, it's a Wednesday night, I'm calling in sick, what are the fans supposed to think? So these type of things, I very easily go to a college game versus a pro game. There's a problem there. I didn't know it was emerging as much as I'm hearing lately. And you know, you're making a part of your show's topic today. They've got a problem. And I'm not so sure I change it. I get out on this, Dave. The NBA Cup garbage. Was brought up. Was an admittance by Commissioner Silver that the game has problems. You put that out there versus gerrymandered. You're playing on these souped up floors with, and I can't even watch because it's looking like the Boise football, the blue field. So that's an annoyance to me. You have all these games. You crown a fake champion, and they did it. To me, this admittance that, hey, I can't compete with college football. I can't compete with the NFL. I can't even compete with college basketball. So in midwinter, let's have this hokey tournament. So they're admitting they have a problem to me. I get out
well,
of that.
I can't even agree with any of this, but whatever. I think. All right, let's take that on. All right, so maybe there's an argument that the game is not aesthetically pleasing. Too many threes, too many players, like someone very exciting, like say an Anthony Edwards, for example, with the Minnesota Timberwolves. They got this cat who is like an original personality, but they got him shooting like 12, 13 threes a game. And he shoots them at a high percentage, but is that really what you want to see Anthony Edwards doing with all of his physical skills and creativity? I mean, that part is frustrating in and of itself because, you know, Anthony Edwards, think about this. What do you want him working on when he's not on the court? Where do you want his sweat equity to go so he becomes a better player? I guarantee you what he's doing is shooting 1,000 three-pointers a day. And I guarantee you what he's not doing is working around that all-around floor game, which he totally has the potential to do. And without that all-around floor game, you lose the chance to make Anthony Edwards the person, the unicorn that I was speaking about earlier, the American player under 30 who can capture the imagination of an audience. They are squandering these opportunities, and I'm not afraid to say it. Obviously, Coach, you know I'm correct on this. But at the same time, I want to make this counter argument, and I'm curious as to your response to this. Because I think this is a very legitimate counter argument, of course. The game maybe was never that exciting. How about that answer? That there is, wow. Back in the day, we overthink in our minds how amazing some of these teams were and how they played this beautiful game. And, you know, some teams did for show, no doubt about it. I'm thinking specifically about some of those Sacramento Kings teams of the late 90s, the Mavericks teams with Dirk and Finley and Nash. There are teams that played beautiful ball. But a couple of things about that. One, those teams that I just mentioned never won titles. And I think that hurt the sport because we know this is a copycat league. And the fact that the teams playing the beautiful game got beaten by the very teams that you just described earlier, like load management, like the great Greg Popovich in San Antonio. Like load management was an easier way to win these games. And rather as opposed to playing beautifully and quickly, 7 seconds or less, the Suns, all of that. I mean, so this is where we're at now, Coach, with a less aesthetically pleasing game. But back in the day, oh, my goodness. I mean, it wasn't as pretty as we are remembering. True or false?
I got to think on that one, Dave, because you didn't mention the Showtime Lakers.
I think when you go back and look at those games, it's shocking at how little people played defense on those fast breaks. It's stunning. I mean, there were a lot of out-of-shape players back then. I mean, it's crazy. You go back and look. There were amazing players, of course. But, you know, some of the competition, I mean, was just not what it is now in terms of defense, in terms of players being – you know, doing their thing in a way that's professional. I don't know, man. I can't get with what you're saying right now. I just can't.
What? You asked me, I've given you some reasons. So you disagree that I said the reasons, or you disagree that these are the reasons why it's a problem?
I think these are the reasons why it's a problem. Straight up. But let's get to this other topic here. I want to be very careful of the time we got because this is important.
Okay.
American players under 30. Where are they, coach? You watch the college ranks. You also coach at the high school level. Talk to us, man. Why aren't these players getting produced for us to root for in ways they have in the past? Where are they?
Where are they? They're there. They're around. They come into the league so quick now because of one and done. And then they have to go through apprenticeship before they become stars. And sometimes they get lost.
Great point.
Flag's going to come in, and he's going to get lost. He's going to go to a losing team. His numbers are going to suffer. There's going to be a lot of criticism about what's wrong with him. Is he overrated? Is he, you know, great white hope type of thing? Because there's a curve. He's 18 dealing with, you know, 25 on up. So you might lose some of that zest and zeal for him, you know? And I'll give you some examples. There are several players that could take the mantle left by Bron and KD, Chris Paul, Steph, when they move on. Cade Cunningham, for one. But he was the first team All-American. But you hadn't heard of him. He went to Detroit. He's losing. They're turning the corner. He might be one. Edwards, he was a first-team All-American, came in. But you haven't heard from him until they got Gobert and he made a playoff run. He can take the mantle. But again, both those guys came into the league, number one picks, or, you know, lottery picks. But they flew under the radar for a couple years. Now they're starting to take root. But one and done's here to stay. Well, maybe not, because some guys can go back to college and make millions of dollars now with NIL.
So what do you think about NIL?
Second year or third year, and be ready to go.
That's the other thing. You know, I've been thinking about a lot recently is NIL. Now, you, as somebody who's always loved the college game and how that's always, as long as I've known you, been a part of your mentality in terms of what you like about sports. Has NIL changed that experience for you?
Yeah, but the NCAA is inept and it's here to stay. I'm glad the players are getting paid. And when I see what the greedy, I was going to use a strong word, of how I think the SEC commissioners and athletic directors have done, the way they destroyed the Pac-10 because of greed. And Dave, it's funny. I was watching the TV the other day, trying to find a game, and Maryland and Oregon was on. And I'm saying, why is this on the Big Ten network? They're both in the Big Ten. Mm. How about that? You know,
wow.
So when I see the greed that has destroyed the Pac-10 and Maryland versus Oregon is a conference game, I just got to ride with NIL and say, players, get your money.
Yeah. Yeah. But doesn't it sometimes feel like they're just picking the meat off the bones of what's left? You see what I'm saying? It's just like everybody's in a cash grab. Everybody's trying to get theirs. Maybe that's just the Trump era we're in. You know, any idea of building institutions like growing up? I mean, I know that I was suckered. I was bamboozled by the NCAA media apparatus. But I did grow up feeling very, very, very set on understanding that Georgetown, Syracuse, St. John's, that's the Big East. You know, Duke, UMD, North Carolina, that's the ACC. Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, of course, Pac-10, of course, or Pac-12, whatever you want to call it. Frankly, that was the first mistake. They should have just kept everything, the names, Pac-10, all that. But just what is that, coach? They had no respect for the tradition at all. And it was sort of left with, well, okay, if Syracuse is going to be in the Big Ten now or wherever the heck it is, the ACC, or if Maryland is going to be in one conference for hoops and another conference for football, I mean, if you don't care about your product, why should anybody else? And then it just becomes like this cash grab because, as I wrote about in my article that you referenced, there is billions of dollars going through sports that wasn't there before because of the gambling addiction industry, because of sweetheart cable deals. But I throw it to you, Coach, with this question. As much as I believe in NIL, because, of course, on a basic justice issue, I think the players should be able to get theirs, even with that, are we now creating a two-tier system among teams, which doesn't sound very healthy, where the NCAA doesn't have to worry at all about things like health benefits or wages for players, but some quarterbacks are being handed $6 million to switch schools while their offensive linemen are only paid in concussions? Are you trying to tell me that that's not going to start some tension down the line on these teams?
It already has.
Yes.
And it will continue to do so. Somewhere there's going to be a bill to pay at the end of all this. How fast, nobody knows. But your answer to the question is why football is king and, you know, Gordon Gekko, man, greed is out there. Greed is good.
Greed is good.
So, yeah. And I keep watching because, you know, I love the college game, basketball game. And among that is the March Madness. And I just keep watching and how football is going to destroy this. I really am fearful for my March Madness in the next couple of years because of football.
Mm. Why, though? It's the only profitable part of college basketball left is March Madness. They're going to hold that till they're, you know, to the last moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I hope. I hope, Dave. I hope. But when you destroy it, and again, the Pac-10 destroyed itself within with some terrible commissioner hires and guys with no vision and roles they shouldn't have been in. But that just opened the door, and man, SEC, Big 12, Big 10 just seized. It was sad to watch.
Yeah.
And before we dance, Greg, I know we're doing a butterfly here, but while we're on that subject of football, I want to mention about the two black coaches at Penn State and Notre Dame, respectively, that are going to have
Please.
One of them is going to be in a national championship.
Because we have Penn State, led by James Franklin, going against Notre Dame, led by Marcus Freeman.
Right.
Now, I think it's pretty darn historic, even though the whole national championship concept is relatively new. We all know that representation matters, particularly at the coaching level, particularly in football. Right. So what are you taking from all this at this point, Coach?
What? I'm glad. I hope that this a light is shed on this more so, because here's what happened. And I just read this article 2 days ago in the LA Times. They go through the litany of the four major conferences with the coaches. Three black coaches in the ACC out of 16. I'm quoting from memory here. I think it was the same number in the Big Ten. Deion Sanders was the only one in the Big 12 out of 12, 13.
Oh, my God.
And here is the worst of it, Dave Zine. There are zero black coaches, head coaches that we're talking about here, in the SEC with 18 teams. And let me throw this on top of that. From 2021 to now, maybe it was 2019, all 80% of their 4- and 5-star recruits were black. So the more things change, the more they say remain the same. This has been historic that the black players can come and play, but we can't get any of 80% of these teams are filled with black players, and probably a higher percentage are your starters. But yet we play the game and get gone and can't get a job. Mm. So I hope, as we talk about, you know, the opportunities for Freeman and Franklin, that we also say, hey, look, here's what's not getting done and hasn't gotten done.
Yeah.
But it's going to get masked away because of NIL, where the kids are getting paid now. Yeah, but we still, we're like leadership. We're still capable and competent. And I remember what John Thompson said when they asked him right after he won the NCAA championship. He was insulted. He said, I am not the first that could have done that. I'm not because there was a lot of coaches denied because of discrimination in this country and in this sport that could have done it way before me.
Wow. And you know what? The thing about John Thompson is that he never let off the gas on this question.
Yes.
And
yes.
And we have made progress, of course, since John Thompson's
day. No question.
You don't think so?
No, I agree. We have. But it's
yeah, the progress is real, but the pace of it is so frustrating.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Yes. Those numbers blew me away when I saw zero in the SEC, and everybody's raving about the SEC in football and even basketball. They're going to send 10 teams to the NCAA tournament and all that kind of stuff. That's in basketball. But the more things change, the more they remain the same in a lot of ways, brother.
No, I hear you. Well said. And that part is very real. And we also want to give some love to James Franklin coming out of the UMD system as well. I mean, that's where my rooting interests lie. Do you have a rooting interest with Penn State and Notre Dame? Anybody you want to see elevated?
In terms of the coach or the team? Or
the coaches.
Players?
Do you have a feeling for Franklin or Freeman as coaches?
More so for Freeman.
What do you think of Freeman?
And you know what? I haven't really followed him much. I root for him. He's in a tough place.
He is.
They do have high standards academic wise. A lot of eyes on him. They've only had one black coach. I think it was Ty Willingham before him. Franklin's got the Big Ten. He's got a recruiting base in the around the country, but in his backyard in Pennsylvania. So he's got, you know, he's got some things going for him that Franklin doesn't have.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what's going on. The coaches are already taking shots at each other. I love that. This isn't a happy, happy, joy, joy moment. This is the real deal. I kind of love that. And I'm really excited to see what's going to take place. I really am.
Who do you
now
like?
Before we go? I'm interested. And I'm usually not a college football guy. You know that.
Neither am I.
I've changed on it a little bit because of it, believe it or not, because of NIL. Like, it feels like a less grossly exploitative enterprise.
Without agree.
That's just my observation on that. And lastly, Coach, before we go, I wanted to know if you had any shout out, if you have any people in Los Angeles in these fires, if everybody's okay in you and your world, because this is so intense right now.
We were talking about, you know, school's out and weather's bad, the streets are bad. And then I just turn on the TV and mesmerize what's going on in L.A. And I say, man, you know, but what's the saying? There's always somebody going through a lot of situations worse than yours, you know?
Word. You like the fact that my son had to go to school today at 9:45 because they were worried about the roads in the upper county.
Exactly.
That to me is just really not that big a deal compared to like, oh, you know, that's the church where I got married. It's been burned to the ground.
Right.
You know, that's what people are living with right now.
Yes. 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 I'm glad
Great
you brought
tragedy.
That up.
Problem. Well, I more brought it up for any reason, Coach, is that, you know, as I age, you know, I do believe in the power of prayer. And I do hope that everybody sends their positive energy towards the good people in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Well done, bro.
Well, yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Coach, any last shout outs you want to give?
No, just Happy New Year to you, soldier.
Hey, Dave, I got a shout out.
Oh, is it to the Washington Commanders? Oh.
It's to Jedi 5, my quarterback.
Oh, man. My shout-out is to Lamar Jackson. Don't let these Steelers fans and haters get you down, buddy. We love you.
You're supposed to be rooting for the Giants, man.
Oh, in heck. Well, I root for the Giants. In absolute heck. You're lucky this is FCC-controlled radio. You dare mention the Giants to me. Ugh. Man, the things I would say. but we'll let that go.
So,
yes, sir.
Magic Mike. Commanders getting to Tampa Bay. They're gonna win that game. I know it's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I'm
confident.
We beat
them last time we won a playoff game. It was against them. I'm confident we could do this with my quarterback.
Baker's going to throw three interceptions, and afterwards everyone's going to be like, oh, can you really win with Baker? And that's going to be my prediction. But that's the narrative. It's coming. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. Good luck, Commanders. Good luck, Ravens. We are
trying to get a winning commercial, man.
Lyrics. Cause 88, time to set it straight, you know what I'm saying?
And there ain't no half stepping. What do Angela Davis, Mehdi Hasan, Ibrahim X. Kendi, V, formerly Eve Ensler, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Sonia Sanchez, Amy Goodman, Medea Benjamin, Mosab Abu Toha, Congresswoman Cori Bush, Noura Erekat, Congressman Jamal Bowman, Farafina Khan, Linda Sarsour, Isra Shakir, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and WPFW have in common? Well, Bus Boys and Poets 2025, Peace Ball, Voices of Justice and Liberation, an event featuring live music, speeches, performances, food, and drink. Details, including a complete list of speakers and performers, as well as how you can both support WPFW and join the fun on Saturday, January 18th, 8 p.m. at Arena Stage's Mead Center for American Theater, can be found at WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world. One broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date